You're listening to The Stressless Life with Dr. Yip, a podcast about conquering your fears and overcoming anxiety. Our question for the day is, scrupulosity OCD, when is it bad to be too good? I am your host, Noah Larracy. Let's say hello to Dr. Yip.
Hello, Noah.
Dr. Yip is a licensed psychologist who's board certified in behavioral and cognitive therapy and an expert in the treatment of anxiety and OCD. So last time we talked about contamination OCD. This time we're going to talk about scrupulosity OCD.
Yes.
So first of all, what does scrupulosity mean?
Well, it just means that you have a radar of what is right and wrong, what is okay and not okay, what's moral and immoral, what's ethical and unethical. And your goal is to live your life on a very rigid, righteous path.
And what's wrong with that?
There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. Again, you know, OCD is not categorical. So it is a fine line. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with wanting to live a righteous life. It's a problem when it becomes so excessive that all of your waking hours, you are checking and ensuring that everything you do and say and even think is along those righteous lines.
So these righteous lines are usually defined in some sort of code like the Bible or some other religious text?
For some people, yes. It could bleed into the area of religiosity. However, there's also morality, right and wrong. And for people who have scrupulosity OCD, it doesn't necessarily need to be of a religious context. It could be anything from, I've had a thought that felt wrong, and therefore, I don't know why I had that thought, such as if I had a thought of harming somebody. Well, that is not a morally correct thought, and therefore, there must be something wrong with me.
So this is where thought-action fusion comes in, doesn't it?
Yes, that is where the term thought-action fusion comes in, which is for people with OCD, they believe that if they think something, it is just the same as if they do something. And all of us have had immoral thoughts. All of us have had unethical thoughts. All of us have had thoughts that felt unclean. Just because you have had the thought doesn't mean that you will actually act upon the thought. And those of us who don't have scrupulous OCD, when we have such thoughts, we go, oh, okay, that's interesting. And we're able to move on. Or we have the thought and don't even think twice about it because we know that's just the way our brains work. We also don't then condemn ourselves for having these thoughts. We don't feel shame. We don't feel guilt. We don't feel immorally bad for having these thoughts. Unfortunately, people with OCD, having these thoughts, having immoral thoughts, is just as bad as doing an immoral act.
So you're saying that we are not responsible for our thoughts?
No, you have absolutely no control over what type of thoughts you have, as we've gone over quite a few times now, that you have thoughts that come into your mind and they just occur because you have billions of stimuli that enters and exits your mind in a given minute. That doesn't mean that you can control what type of stimuli enters and exits your mind. What you do have the ability for is called selective attention. You can choose which stimuli you're going to attend to. You can choose how you're going to react and respond to a thought that you have. And this is true for any thought, not just religious or immoral or scrupulous OCD thoughts. However, you have no control over the type of thoughts that you have.
So let's give some examples of how scrupulosity OCD shows up in some of your patients.
Okay, so for example, I had a patient who was probably 10 years old at the time, and he learned at his religious school that if you lie, you'll go to hell. And therefore, he then feared lying. And the reality is that we often say things and nothing comes off it. So for example, he started to be afraid that if he promised his friend that he would go out and ride his bike with his friend and he later ended up not doing it, then the initial promise was a lie. So rather than saying what he would do, he would then just tell people, I don't know. Or he actually ended up not saying anything at all. It got to the point where anything that he said, he would then say, take it back, or forget it, or I didn't mean that. And that was kind of his way of undoing the thing that he said to begin with. So let's say you asked me, do you want to have ice cream later? And I'm not so sure. I'm inclined to say yes. However, I don't know whether I'm actually going to want ice cream later. So I'll say, maybe, take it back. And that was his way of undoing his intention and undoing the possibility that he could have lied. So it got to a point where this poor boy just wasn't speaking at all. He couldn't say anything at all. He couldn't write anything. He couldn't communicate with anyone for fear of saying the wrong thing that could be potentially thought of as a lie. There was a teenager that I worked with many years ago. She was 16, 17, and she was becoming intimately active with her boyfriend at the time. And her family had very strict rules in terms of what was okay and what was not okay for dating. And therefore, if she felt like she crossed the line in terms of even having thoughts of certain sexual or intimate experiences with her boyfriend, she would feel guilty. And it wasn't just normal. It wasn't just like minor levels of guilt. She would feel excessive guilt and shame that she had disobeyed her parents by having these thoughts of wanting to be intimate with her boyfriend. And it got to the point where she started to avoid her boyfriend, or she would avoid having contact, avoid speaking with him, avoid interacting with him. And of course, that caused her a lot of pain and eventually led to depression. However, it started out with that. We worked with a young adult who followed the religion of the Seventh-day Adventist. And for this religion, you can't even have sexual thoughts at all if you are unmarried. So for her, she couldn't even have sexual thoughts. She couldn't think impure. She couldn't even have sexual feelings. And whenever she felt like a tingling sensation, she would attribute it as a sexual feeling, even though it could be anything. And she would feel that she had violated her religion. She would need to call her pastor. She would need to make a confession. She would need to make sure that she was still pure and she was still clean. So as you see, when it comes to religion, it really depends where you are, right? It really depends on the boundary. There's nothing wrong with wanting to be pure. There's nothing wrong with wanting to live a righteous life. However, it gets in the way when every waking hour becomes consumed with what is right and what is wrong and what sin you've committed and what immoral act you've had or what immoral thought you've had.
In researching for this episode, I read on the IOCDF website that apparently Martin Luther, John Bunyan, and a number of other famous religious leaders apparently may have suffered from scrupulosity OCD. What do you think about that?
I wouldn't be surprised, you know. In fact, we've had a couple of patients where religious figures need to be consulted. We had to bring on, whether it's pastors or priests or ministers, or rabbis to consult with so that we can normalize the experience of having these impure thoughts and to kind of give some perspective into what the religion entails. Now, from every religious figure I've spoken with who has consulted with our patients, all of them would say that the religion would never stipulate that you have to suffer because you had an immoral thought. That the religion would want you to be a active member, a productive member of society. And if OCD is getting in the way of that, then that is not part of the religion. That is part of you. And for people with OCD, part of that is understanding, well, is this really what the religion stipulates? Or is this what your OCD mind is saying to play tricks on you into believing that this is part of your religion?
So what role do shame and guilt play in scrupulosity OCD?
Huge. I mean, the whole point of scrupulosity OCD is that you don't do things that are immoral, that is unethical, because if you do, then you are a bad person, that you have to live a good life. And if you have bad thoughts or you do bad things, then you are a bad person. So a lot of people in this cluster of OCD have a need to tell. They feel the need. And this can start very young. They feel the need to tell their parents every little thing. Or an adult would feel the need to tell their family members or their partner every little thing so that they feel like they're not hiding anything. Because if they're hiding something, then that could be withholding the truth, which would be unethical. And I can tell you that many family members and many parents have basically stated that they don't want to hear everything. I mean, these kids and these adults, they would say everything that happened in their lives, from who they spoke with today and what were the conversations about and what they ate and whether they liked what they ate or what they didn't like and where they went and who they interacted with and what they thought the day, how did they feel during the day. If they felt something for the parent, then they feel the need to tell them. I mean, it can go on and on. And can you imagine if you had to hear every little detail of a family member's life? It would take the entire day.
No fun. Now, would a football player who makes a cross after he scores a touchdown, would that count as scrupulosity OCD?
Not necessarily. I mean, we see this a lot in sports, right? Especially during playoff seasons. Now, that's not to say that it doesn't happen, that OCD doesn't happen with athletes. It actually does, because there is a superstitiousness, magical thinking when it comes to sports in general, right? Obviously, one team has to lose. One team has to win. And the winner of the team is going to thank somebody, whether it be God or other spiritual experience, or thank the sock that they kept wearing for every single game, or the backpack that they wore for every single pregame, or, you know, they would wear the same clothes. So there's a magical feel to this. Now, again, there's a fine line, right? So if you're just making a cross after you win, all right, well, that's just what you do. However, then if you have to make a cross every single time, or if you forget to make a cross, you then go and worry that you've just caused bad luck to yourself, and therefore your game is going to suck this next time around, then we're now bordering on OCD excessive tendencies.
So what exactly is the treatment for scrupulosity OCD? Obviously, we know it's exposure and response prevention, but yes. What are some of the specific interventions you would use?
Well, we would purposely expose you to whatever it is that you are avoiding. So this is where a lot of the religious figures have been very, very helpful, because we could expose you to, for example, not doing the cross. That would be simple. We could expose you to not praying and not confessing. That would be simple. It gets more tricky when we are now exposing you to purposely lying, to purposely telling white little lies, to purposely cursing, to purposely doing something that would be sinful for your religion. That is when it becomes tricky. And that is where it is useful to have the religious leader in place to consult with the person who is suffering from OCD.
Now, the religious leader doesn't give the patient, quote unquote, permission to do the lie, right?
No, the religious leader would explain how this isn't part of their religion, that what they're experiencing isn't some sort of moral thermometer of who they are as a person according to their religion. The religious leader would support what the treatment entails, because the point is that they are doing things that might appear sinful in order to get rid of OCD. It doesn't mean that they are actually doing something sinful to the religion, right? You have to understand that when we are considering our actions, the intention of our action is what's important, not just the action itself, right? So if I am going to, for example, say a curse word to the cross, well, what was my intention? Was my intention really to curse the cross or to curse Jesus or to curse my religion? No, that wasn't my intention. My intention was to curse damn OCD and therefore get rid of OCD. So you have to really take your intention into consideration.
Is it difficult for people with scrupulosity OCD to do these exposures?
Oh, initially, yes. It becomes very, very difficult because they truly believe that they are doing something wrong, that they are doing something that is shameful and immoral. And it affects their sense of value, their sense of worthiness, to a point where OCD can really debilitate their confidence level, their self-esteem, their identity as a person. So yes, initially doing these exposures are going to be difficult, as most exposures are. It's just more difficult for people with scrupulosity OCD because that is what they're focused on. Now, a person with contamination OCD would say, yeah, I'll trade you. I'll curse the cross as long as I don't have to go and touch urine, as long as I don't have to touch vomit, right? And a person with scrupulosity OCD will say, well, I'll go and touch vomit as long as I don't have to curse the cross. So again, each person is going to find that their exposures are going to feel extreme, are going to feel difficult, because that's what they fear.
What is the relapse rate for scrupulosity OCD? Is this something that comes back even after treatment every once in a while?
Well, you know, there's always a potential for relapse, which is why it's really important for the psychoeducation to occur throughout treatment. If a person truly understands what OCD is and what treatment entails, then that person is literally learning to be their own therapist, which is the goal of treatment, because OCD is a lifelong illness. It's not something that just goes away with treatment. You will still have thoughts time and time again. The only difference is you just won't put as much weight and value to the thoughts that come up. Remember, you have no control over the type of thoughts you have. So therefore, you will have another thought. Just because you've gone through treatment doesn't mean that you won't have any OCD thoughts anymore. You just won't look at it the same way as you did before treatment. So that doesn't really answer the question of what the relapse rate is, and because we really don't have a specific answer in terms of what the relapse rate is for scrupulosity OCD. What we do know is that if patients are educated about their OCD and they truly understand the ins and outs of their treatment tools, then they need to continue applying them even after termination of treatment. And if they do, then they just become stronger and stronger. Remember, treatment is like learning a new skill, as I've said many times before. It's like learning a new language or learning a new instrument. If you don't keep practicing this new language or this new instrument, then you lose the skill. And with the treatment of OCD, it's no difference. You have to continuously apply the tools that you've learned to continue to maintain your strength.
Great. Well, thank you so much. I'm really enjoying this journey into the world of OCD.
Thank you, Noah.
Thank you for listening to the Stressless Life Podcast. You can join the discussion and find more information at thestresslesslifepodcast.com. Please write to us with questions and comments at podcast@thestresslesslife.com. Until next time, stay stressless.